2CH 1170. This is Sunday Night Open Line with Dominic Steele.
On the line now, we have Anna McGann. She's acted all over the place in Underbelly, in Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, House Husbands, 100 Bloody Acres, Anzac Girls, and currently in the Dr. Blake Mysteries. Good evening, Anna.
Oh, good evening.
How nice to talk to you this evening.
Hello.
How are you?
Sorry, I didn't know we were going. I'm really well, thank you, Dominic. How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, you're a Brisbane girl originally, then Sydney,
yeah, originally.
Now Melbourne. And you've really had quite a remarkable professional life. But I want to talk to you tonight about your spiritual life. Did you grow up with a personal relationship with God?
Well, it's strange, actually, that question, because I have a distinct memory of being a young child. I did go to sort of I had a somewhat, I guess, secular Catholic upbringing,
mm-hmm. yep.
more ritualistic or cultural than it was spiritual. But I do remember this. I remember writing a letter to God when I was a child, and I really just said, if you're real, you'll take the letter and it will be gone in the morning. And I remember waking up and it was still there, and I felt this just like little heartbreak. And it's so funny because from that sort of point on, I didn't really grow up with a relationship with God, certainly not with Jesus. Until much, much later.
What was the journey for you from high school into acting?
It was, it was a bit of a blindsided thing. I didn't do acting in high school. I was actually, I was a bit of a problematic adolescent. in the sense, not that I was particularly rebellious, but in the sense that I was a little troubled. I couldn't make sense of my place. And I didn't understand myself, and I didn't understand the journey, and I struggled very deeply with eating disorders and mental illness. And when I graduated from high school, and I was sort of a high achiever, so I was high functioning. So when I graduated, I sort of had this point of going, well, all I really want to do is engage with creativity, but I can't do that. That's not a real job. So I studied psychology, and I loved it. But as I was at uni, sort of found myself more and more in sort of joining the theatre, amateur theatre group, and doing short films and doing, you know, a bit more theatre, and then eventually auditioned for acting school against my parents' wishes. And I got in. And sort of that began from there.
Then where were some of your first acting jobs?
Well, the first job I would have had would have been out of acting school, would have been a professional Shakespeare play, production of Julius Caesar.
Yep.
Followed, like, simultaneously, I was shooting a show called Spirited off the Foxtel. That was my first real television gig. And then the day that the play finished, I moved to Sydney and I started Underbelly.
Wow. Okay. So it wasn't long out of acting school that you were thrown into really very high profile in that Underbelly role.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It was a baptism by fire, to say the least. It was a very swift transition, and I, to be honest, probably wasn't prepared for it. But I was, you know, and I didn't expect it. That's the other thing. You don't always, they very much train you to leave acting school with the full knowledge that you're never going to really work.
You're
going to
spend your whole time working in a cafe or something.
yeah. And everyone sort of goes in with the dream, and I guess I'd almost already sort of written myself off. So I was very, very lucky to say that. Yeah, very, very, very blessed.
And how along this journey did relationship with God start? I think you were telling me on the phone this morning it was through a conversation with another actor on a set.
Actually, well, it wasn't. But sorry,
I've remembered wrong from our conversation this morning.
It was a little different. It was, although I did. There were conversations, but. I mean, to frame it properly, like this, when I became an actor particularly, a lot of my mindset became very much this idea that for me to be a successful creative person, I needed to have a chaotic life. And the more chaotic and sort of broken my life was, the more I'd have to draw on as an artist and the better my art would be across both acting and writing and all this other stuff. And I'd really bought into that lie. And so a lot of my life was driven by, I guess, a very consumerist approach to it. It was driven by, you know, new experiences, you know, finding new lovers, trying new experiences, trying new drugs, being in these very extreme situations. And it got to a point, particularly when I moved to Sydney and started work, that it was everything was just fracturing in front of me. Like, you can't have a lifestyle like that and not have that start to happen eventually. But I was learning that the hard way, and I guess I had started to become incredibly lonely in it too. And I was realizing that I was doubling back on myself. I'd been circling the same things. I was like, I've been here before. I've made this mistake before. Why is that? And it was becoming very dissatisfying. And I pursued a very, I guess, new age spirituality where yeah. I delved a lot into meditation and yoga, but even more into the occult, like Reiki and tarot and stuff like that. I was very involved with that stuff. And seeking spiritual guidance, like definitely very sensitive.
There was an emptiness that you wanted.
Totally. But there was also a sensitivity to the fact that something's there. And I, you know, it was this indication to me that I was like, I can feel things that other people can't feel. Like there's something there. But to me, it was a very universalist, one shade spiritual, like in everyone was God and God was in everything and all spirituality was good. And it was in 2012, the year had started just explosively, and I'd had an experience on New Year's Eve where I'd encountered what I felt to be demonic spirituality pretty much for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was really like confronting. And I remember leaving that situation sort of a bit, reeling a little bit, going, I wonder if there's difference. I wonder if there's good spirituality and bad spirituality. And I wonder what I'm in. But sort of ignored the thought. And I was at this time, and I want to add just quickly, sorry, I'm just launching in.
That's all right.
Yeah. But I do want to add, I actually missed Wes's chat with you, but I'm a massive Wes Heal fan. I find his story and his walk absolutely extraordinary. And I just wanted to add that in, because so much of my walk has involved a lot of that journey and struggle too. At the time that I was, at this point in time, I was very, very confused about all elements of sexuality, and I was very much in like an anti-Christian activist, yeah. and very much, you know, very much for LGBT rights, you know, and very much and very angry at the church for the way it had, I felt, treated me as a woman and treated me as someone that didn't have, you know, a defined or you know, normal idea of sexual orientation. Was very aggressive about it. And so I would often go around and say, like, I don't judge anyone except for Christians, and was, you know, quite, I guess, rigid. And I made this one friend that at the start of that year, just this strange friend who lived in Melbourne. I was living in Sydney, and he was a musician. And he and I became friends, and I knew, someone had told me, well, you know, he's a Christian. I thought, wow, that's so weird. He seems so intelligent. Why is someone so intelligent, you know, engage with something that just is ridiculous? But he seemed to have this just buoyancy about him always. And I got to this point where I was infuriated that he wouldn't bring it up. I was like, what has he got that he's withholding? Like, if he thinks he's got this great thing, like, why does he talk about it? And it started to make me really, really curious. Even just politically, and got to this point where he and I had been friends for a few months, and I visited Melbourne and I saw him down there. And it's so funny, Dominic, you were telling me a bit of your story earlier, but I, at the time, I had quite a crush on this guy and was like, you know, like, maybe I can convince him, you know, to sort of come to my side of the camp spiritually. And he sort of sat down with me and was really like, you know, I'm not going to date you. I'm a Christian. I'm a worship pastor, and if you ever want to understand why that is or what that means, then we can have a conversation about it. But I just want to respectfully, you know, let you know. And I said, well, why don't we talk about it right now? Like, this is, you know, thinking that I guess I could convince him of chakras and Reiki and stuff. I was like, I'm spiritual too. And he sat with me for about 3 hours, and I guess the concept of God I could take. The concept of Jesus I definitely wasn't ready for. But he talked about the Holy Spirit. And I'd never heard anybody talk about the Holy Spirit before, and talk about the Holy Spirit you know, moving someone's heart or moving them creatively or flowing through them. And I sat there going, I know about this. Like, this is how I experience life. Like, there's something real in this. At the end of the conversation, he was like, look, if you're ever back in Melbourne, come and visit my church, visit my small group. And I was like, yeah. And I had no plans to be in Melbourne again. And I was like, yeah, right. 2 days later, I was in a bar at this party, and it was pretty, like, it was in Sydney, it was a bit debaucherous. And a girl came up to me and goes, you've been hanging out with this guy, this friend of mine. And I said, oh, yeah, he's a Christian, though, you know, like, ugh. And she goes, I'm a Christian. And she sat with me that night, and she witnessed to me for about 2 hours. And she just consistently, she just asked me what I believed, and I was like, well, I'm a Buddhist, and I'm this, and I'm this, and this. She's like, actually, what we believe, it's not that different. And she just consistently affirmed, I guess, my openness in my position, was like, you should come and visit my church. I think you'd love it. And for someone that had personally felt like they embodied everything that the church hated and was against, for someone then to say, not only would you be welcome at my church, but you would approve of my church, like you would enjoy it, it's something you'd like, I felt incredibly moved. And she invited me, and I immediately just said yes. Like, I couldn't even control it coming out of my mouth.
Was that St. Philip's York Street?
It was yep. St. Philip's York Street. It was their evening service. And I just remember it. I remember it so, so clearly. She picked me up, and I was so nervous. I didn't tell anyone. It was this big secret. I didn't tell my Melbourne friend. And I told sort of the people I was staying with at the time that I was like, oh, you know, I'm just going to mock it. Like, you know, I'm just going to make fun of it. Like, it's just this silly thing that I'm, you know, this isn't a serious thing. But I was desperately curious. And I went into this service, and, you know, St. Philip's is this normal church in the city.
Yep.
And
just on Churchill, just near the Harbour Bridge. When you're coming across the Harbour Bridge from North Sydney, basically if you don't go on the Carl Expressway, you see St. Philip's.
Yeah. That is exactly the one. And I walked to the entrance of this church, just to the side. It hadn't even started. And as I crossed the threshold to walk into this church, I had this sensation like my hands were on fire. And previously, a lot of spiritual experiences I'd had been through things like Reiki, which often involves sensations like that in the hands, but this was completely different. And I just had this feeling like there's something going on. And I had vision of this sort of golden light falling around me, and this complete sensation of going, whatever is in this place, it's pure. And I can trust it. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced something spiritual and gone, I know this is good. And I had this point of reference. And I sort of went into the space and was like, I'm safe here. I'm safe here. And I sat there, and there was this woman leading worship who's now a very good friend of mine, but it was just so extraordinary now. And they preached from the book of James and just spoke about taming the tongue. And it was such a gentle message for someone that didn't know Jesus, didn't understand the concept of salvation. But to hear that message was to go, wait a second, the Bible says things that are relevant to me. How, like, oh, that's ridiculous. And I was actually infuriated by it. I was like, wow, like, why am I resonating with this? And then sort of this had this...
When I'm supposed to be so against God.
Exactly. And also the way that I could reject God was by rejecting the Bible. So the way I could go, well, God doesn't exist and God isn't relevant and God is not for me, is by going, well, the Bible's bigoted and the Bible's discriminatory and it doesn't make sense and it, you know, it isn't logical. And I haven't read it, but, you know, this is coming across the word for the first time and going, but that's true. Like, so it says something that's true. Crap. Sorry. it's just confronting. And then I was actually so moved. Basically, they sang this worship song at the end, this friend of mine now, but a stranger at the time, sang this worship song, and I was compelled. I was moved to tears, and I went into communion because I'd had my first communion in the Catholic Church and was like, I'm allowed. And sort of sat back down in this sort of sense of awe, but didn't mention it to anyone. Left that night, thought about it all week, didn't tell anybody, and then the next week secretly went back again. And maybe a few days later, found out that I had a job, house husband, in Melbourne, and was to move down to Melbourne. All of a sudden, drop everything, move to Melbourne. And the only people I knew in Melbourne were
this
sort of
worship
like an atheist
pastor.
Friend.
Yeah.
Well, this worship pastor and an atheist friend and someone that I'd had this sort of love affair with. And it was all just sort of like, I had my three options in front of me, you know, like, and I just, when I got down there, I was just in the midst of all of these questions. And so I went to this church, this little Pentecostal church that this guy's family ran and his small group. And I was just like, I was literally every day just going, Anna, you're being brainwashed. What are you doing? But I almost had to get to the bottom of it. I was like, this,
so,
I
so
need
tell
to
me
resolve
that,
this.
Let me cut to the chase. Tell me now, who is Jesus for you and what does his death on the cross mean for you?
Sorry, I must have taken epic of all of my time for you, Dominic.
You have, so I've got to move it up.
Sorry. Well, the rest of the story is riffing. Right now, the person of Jesus transformed me, completely rescued me from the life I was leading, has completely rebuilt me in my identity. For the first time, I think I've discovered who I am and what I was made for, and I feel resolutely that I was made for him. And I live my life as best I can in complete service to Jesus, and consider him the greatest decision I've ever made.
Yeah. And his death on the cross for you?
His death on the cross for me is absolutely extraordinary to me because I feel so deeply that he... that it was personal. And I feel that I understand now my own resurrection, my own death. I understand my old man is on the floor. I understand how my pilgrimage can take me to that place of being able to stand before God at the end of my life and have Jesus as my mediator, having died for every single sin that I made, washing me completely clean so that I can stand before my Father in righteousness, and it's overwhelming.
Hmm. Hey, Anna, I'm going to get you to hang on for a minute. I'm going to come back and ask you a couple more questions, but we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back to you in just a moment. 2CH Magic 1170, it's 10 minutes to 11.
2CH 1170, Sunday night, open line.
7 minutes to 11, Dominic Steele here, filling in for Kel Richards tonight, and we have on the line Aussie actress Anna McCann, and she's acted all over the place in Underbelly and Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, House Husbands, and currently in the Dr. Blake Mysteries. Anna, I've got a couple of other things I wanted to ask you about. You were in a Pentecostal church in Melbourne, you've moved over to an Anglican church in Melbourne, but you're actually working with a little group that you've started, a network of Christian actors and actresses, artists. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, basically, a year ago, Dominic, I was living in LA, actually over a year ago, I was living in LA in a very creative Christian community.
Yep.
And I was seeing artists taking on the role as missionaries to LA. And they would come to LA not only to share their craft, but to minister very intentionally. And they were very bold, and I came home very bold, to be honest. And I really felt the Lord's moving to start up a forum or just a place where artists that were Christians didn't have to hide in the shadows as I felt like they would, the ones that I had met were doing in the Australian industries, like on set and in all these sort of different performance industries especially. I felt like there needed to be a space where we could encourage each other, pray for each other, share testimonies, and just know that we existed. And so I started the Fireplace just, you know, one night. I just started it up. It was just started as a Facebook group and just said, okay, who wants to get together and pray for one another and for our industries? And slowly it just started to grow. We started getting people from Sydney and from Brisbane as well, not just in Melbourne, and then in LA, just Australian Christian artists that were trying, I guess, to identify how they could be completely 100% creative and serving excellence in their craft, but also 100% Christian and, you know, boldly witnessing and living a life actually that was dedicated to Jesus, that was for Jesus, living their lives poured out as an offering. And so what we've seen over the past year has been so beautiful because communities has formed. And so now we have these sort of groups, this group of people that when they see God move in the arts, or when they feel a call to witness, or when they feel a call to pray, or when somebody comes to faith, or an actor or an artist comes to faith, there's sort of this point of reference. There's a place to go, okay, we're not alone. And it's been really, really, really lovely to be a part of.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you've been quoted in a few places on the subject of nudity. And as I've read and heard you speaking out as an actor and playing a nude scene in the past, and then story awfully of people taking screenshots of your body, putting them on online out of context. But I just wanted to ask, and I mean, as a person who watches television and watches television shows, when a nude scene comes on, I choose to close my eyes and keep my eyes closed until I hear the music change, because I want to be a guy who has eyes only for the naked body of my wife, Kathy. Do you know? And we've been married for 23 years, and I just know that it would be bad for my mind, bad for our relationship, for me to keep my eyes open at that scene. And so I close my eyes. And I've been thinking that if I didn't have enough self-control to do that, I'm just thinking Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus says, if your right eye causes you to sin, cut it off. Do you know, your right arm causes you to sin, cut it off. Do you know, that I would have to choose not to watch those shows. But how have you sort of thought about this issue as an actress? And also, what's your thoughts on all of that?
It's a really interesting sort of topic and question, Dominic, and I really admire your stance on it, because I think it's a powerful stance to take, particularly understanding the human mind and how we work with sexuality too, and how vulnerable we are. And I think my previous choices came from, I guess, a naivety in that I didn't understand the vulnerability of human sexuality and temptation, and actually how destructive that process, the pornographic process, is. And now, as a Christian, I have Christian brothers, and I have a responsibility as their sister to help them in their walk. And I also have responsibility to myself, to my body as a temple. And I would have to really agree with what you're saying. But I think it is a fascinating issue, because I think it's not always black and white in shows and for artists. And I don't ever want to condemn an artist that chooses to do it, because I understand that concept. I was there. But a lot of my conviction, I guess, came from seeing the fallout of choosing to do that. And even though I was feeling liberated as a woman, having, my body, my choice, later on seeing what that could be used for, or how the objectification of women could be propelled, or how young men could fall into a pattern of relating to certain images, sexual images, in a certain way. That's just something that my conviction is so strongly that I can't partake in. And so it's been a really interesting journey transitioning from being someone that was probably,
as wild as they come.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as well as they come, and almost in some ways known for that. Like, that first role got a lot of attention because it was quite extreme. And to go from that to be the person that says, actually, I know I've done it before. I know that you can look that up if you want to, but I'm actually not going to do it again. And I've just seen God's protection over my life time and time again.
Hey, Anna, thanks very much for talking to us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Dominic.
Anna McGann there,